From the backstretch at Saratoga, this is Loose on the Lead with Steve Bick and Seth Merrill. Loose on the Lead is sponsored by Thoroughgraph, everything you need to win. Visit Thoroughgraph.com. The new Colonial Downs and the Virginia Equine Alliance. Hill and Dale, home of perennial standouts. Curlin, Kitten's Joy, Midnight Luke, and emerging stallions, Violence, Byron, and Army Mule. Visit hillanddalefarms.com for consignments at the 2019 yearling sales. Case Supply, the kitchen and bath professionals across upstate New York. Showrooms in Syracuse, Auburn, and Amsterdam. Make your dream kitchen and bath a reality. Visit casesupplyinc.com. And McMahon of Saratoga, standing breakout stallion, Central Banker. Number one in New York and among the nation's leading young sires. Visit McMahonThoroughbred.com.
Good morning and welcome to Loose on the Lead on this Sunday morning. Seth Merrill and Steve Bick live from Saratoga, just in front of Clare Court. Steve to my right, but to my immediate right, also being joined early this morning by Jeff Bloom, Bloom Racing. Maybe the most exciting race on the card yesterday. The personal ensign got it done with Midnight Bijou. Steve, good morning. Jeff, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
And just before we get into the race itself and whatnot, have you seen her this morning? How'd she come out of the race?
I have seen her. In fact, excuse me, she was out grazing early this morning. Steve Asmussen was walking her around, happy camper. She ate up all her food, and it was as if she didn't really run in a race yesterday. Yeah. So that's good.
Yeah, absolutely. Why don't we start right off and play into the personal ensign, which... Man, was a ding-dong battle, clearly. Midnight Bijou and a late. Midnight Bijou is the number one horse, a late the number four horse. She's a Julie, the number three, finishes third. But talk about coming down the stretch and your feelings as we get to the finish line. And again, a ding-dong nose victory on the chart. Take us through the stretch run.
So there's a lot of butterflies and anxiety at this point. You could tell that both Elate and Midnight were locked and loaded. Jose Ortiz and Mike Smith looked like they knew they had a lot of horse. I saw Elate getting first run on us, which did concern me a little bit. But at the same time, Mike Smith has told me so many times that this filly, you just point her to the wire. She knows how to win. She's got that will to win. It ended up being a little bit closer than I would have hoped for. And, you know, when they crossed the wire, I thought we had it. You don't want to be overly confident, but at the same time, I really did think we got it. It wasn't so much a bobbing thing as much as she had the momentum and she was moving through it. As it turns out, waiting down there on the track for the photo to pop up, that felt like about two hours, 3 hours maybe. How long was it? It seemed forever.
They did take their time. I thought it was pretty clear. I mean, live, and then you get that slow replay and the ISO shot,
right?
And it was pretty obvious that she had her measure. And to be honest, Elate really did not have one of those responses that you sometimes see, where you see a horse kind of lunge, and she really didn't have any answer late, it seemed. But bring us even back to pre-race, Jeff.
Sure.
And talk a little bit about what the strategy was, because I can tell you from the punditry side and the handicapping side, the general consensus was this was a late opportunity. She was going to have a tactical edge and an advantage really throughout. And Mike Smith and the filly neutralized it.
Well, so Mike and the filly know each other so well at this point. And, obviously Mike's been on her so many times, but I think more so in the last four or five races, they've really become so much in sync. And Mike has such a keen understanding of how she wants to play. And the fact of the matter is there's a lot of diversity here. She's such a versatile filly in terms of if you need to use up some speed with her, you can. I think the way the race played out at the outset was what we all thought. There would be enough speed up front for Mike to lay back and make that one big run. And, of course, coming into the race, there was all this talk. Well, Midnight Bijou can only win going a mile in the 16th, which has always been ridiculous. Her opportunities at distances other than a mile in the 16th, she was compromised in a couple of situations, and it wasn't like she had run at the further distances that many times. Also, here at Saratoga, she didn't run her best races. She ran well, but she didn't come in the right exact situations from a timing standpoint and various other things. So it felt great for her to be able to validate, which is what we all knew. Look, she can win at Saratoga. She's proven she can beat the best fillies and mares in the country, and the distance is irrelevant. This filly will run longer. In fact, as wide as she went, it was as though she ran a mile and a quarter, and she was carrying extra weight. That's something that people really didn't take into account. She was carrying, packing 4 pounds, I believe, more than Elate, and much more than that than the other fillies in the race. So to me, it really was just a huge stamp of approval, and you know, I couldn't be prouder, and, you know, I joke, I'm running out of adjectives to describe how remarkable and elegant and beautiful and competitive this filly is. She loves what she's doing, and she does have that determination and will to win. And I think Mike not only appreciates that, but recognizes that, and he rides her with such extreme confidence. The filly loves having Mike on her back, and I mean, outside of me being on her back, you know, and having that same relationship that Mike has, you know, it just works out well. And so I think the race played out the way we kind of expected it to play out when it's all said and done.
Certainly a great three-year-old season, but it's just been a phenomenal four-year-old season. Now, as we were watching her come down, that close-up down the stretch, is that was her tongue flapping
out there?
That's
the tongue, sure. Yeah.
That's her signature thing. And sometimes, you know, if you have to use the tongue to get to the wire first, then by all means, we're going to do it. And so we've trained her in the mornings with that. But it is, you know, I was watching that, by the way, and I'm like, so if her tongue flaps out first, that counts, right?
A couple of things, and Seth, you bring up the campaign. She's 6 for 6. And before we talk about the end of the year and postseason, what's the game plan between now and the distaff?
Well, the good news is she immediately came out of the race in excellent shape. And first conversation with Steve is we'll go straight to the Bell Dam at Belmont Park, which is a great sign that, you know, she's up to the task of having another race in between. And so we'll stay here at Saratoga for a while and probably ship down to Belmont just on top of that race, get that done, and then from there head out to California and get her settled in. And she'll camp out in California for a good while, being able to essentially run out of her own stall, if you will, for the Breeders' Cup.
On that topic, would you have considered, and you know, I know there was those couple of years where the Asmussen barn had a string out west, given the dialogue that came out of last week in the Pacific Classic, and Steve was on with me after the weekend, and we brought up Tenfold and the whole situation where the West Coast tracks, out of their abundance of caution, have these deep and now much different main tracks than historically they have. And you can appreciate this. And of course, you know, she started her career with Bill Spahr, and certainly, you know, as a 2-year-old and early 3-year-old was running at Santa Anita, that main track is probably a little different than it was then. Any consideration about going out early, running even in the Zenyatta and the distaff?
Yeah, I mean, certainly there's been the discussion about, well, what is the right game plan? What's the path to get you there the best way? I think it's not so much a need to run over that track in a race prior to the Breeders' Cup as much as it is allow the filly the opportunity to acclimate, get in, get comfortable, and also have the ability to train over a track that, as you said, is going to be substantially different, most likely, than what she experienced there before. And so... the way it is with her being out here already, the Bell Dam seems to be the most obvious way to go about it and still allow her, afford her that opportunity to have the time to settle in out there.
And you mentioned staying up here at Saratoga. That is something that the Asmussen barn has done the last several years. Scott Blasey will stay up here, and Blasey will supervise a lot of the stars when it gets nice and quiet. And Chad Brown, Bill Mott, there's several barns that stay around and the activity into the early fall. But the Asmussen camp has really made a habit of this.
It's a program that's worked out really well for them. And look, Scott knows this filly inside out. I mean, they eat, sleep, breathe together. And so it's also, you know, sort of nice when the meet ends. It's a great place to be if you're training horses. The weather's starting to cool off. Things are certainly less hectic out there on the track. The filly's been doing so well here, and it'll just be an easy van ride to go straight down to Belmont when she's ready to go.
You've kind of already alluded to it, but I want you to touch on Mike Smith, who's been on board for most of the career, and just what kind of a confidence level does he give you?
So, you know, when I spend time with Mike and we talk about it, one of the things Mike talked about with me, and this was a long time ago, when we thought we were dealing with a pretty special filly was that, Jeff, this filly, I believe, is going to be in that same conversation with the great ones. And that's only been an enhanced conversation in terms of, you know, where this filly fits. And think about some of the horses Mike's been on, especially as recent as Songbird and Zenyatta. So, you know, Mike said to me just weeks ago that there's just an understanding he has, this connection with the filly, in terms of she shows him where to go, basically, is what he said, you know, and he knows that, he feels it, and he understands it. And so, you know, I kid all the time when, you know, as soon as Mike gets legged up on the horse, I can just step back, relax, and not even have to think about what the game plan is, where he's going to be coming from. And, you know, this whole thing about Mike leaving it just a jump from the wire, he's gotten it done. So we'll take it and enjoy the ride. You know.
Yeah, a guy with his experience and success, that's got to, as I say, add to the confidence level.
Absolutely.
Jeff, given how tumultuous the three-year-old picture has been, and there's a lot of scenarios people could paint on that front, given that we don't necessarily have, I suppose, McKenzie is your pro tem leader in the handicap division and in general. I know that there's cases being made for Bricks and Mortar as part of the Horse of the Year candidacies are going. If she wins the Beldame and the Distaff, why isn't she Horse of the Year?
Well, I'm going to agree with you on that one. You know, it's
well, I'm for it.
Yeah, I think that's a brilliant idea. Look, it's hard to argue that she wouldn't be in the conversation with the campaign that she's had, including some of the matchups that she's faced in accomplishing that the undefeated run so far this year. So it is an interesting year relative to the handicap division, and as you said, the three-year-old ranks as topsy-turvy as we've ever seen. So depending upon how things play out, it's exciting to imagine that we have a filly that would, in fact, be in the discussion, certainly as one of the finalists for Horse of the Year. And, wow, you know, it's how do you even dream about that?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like she's definitely going to step into the conversation. Two races back, she beats Come Dancing, who looked fabulous yesterday. Yesterday, she beats Elate. So certainly, as you say, the competition has been great. It's a grade one up at Saratoga. And just talk about that. I mean, obviously, her resume, plenty of grade ones on here already. But what's it like to come and win a nice grade one on Traverse Day?
Well, career best figure, too, a 104 buyer.
In front of 48,000 people.
It's hard to do. So, you know, taking down a win, I mean, this, I love being here at Saratoga. I love racing here at Saratoga. It's so hard to win a race. So to win the grade one personal ensign and to know that you're going to have your jockey colors, your silks, around the water fountain at the entrance.
That's interesting. I never thought about that.
Yeah. Oddly enough, that was like the one thing that I wanted more than anything. So it's like I'm floating. I'm in a dream state. I'm so appreciative of it. And I recognize how fortunate I am to be around the greatness of a filly like this. And look, in my career, in the various things I've been fortunate to do, I've been around some incredible horses in my time, especially as a work rider. And so I think I have just a more keen sense of appreciation for what this means to be around such a remarkable filly that graces us with her elegance. And so the fact that, you know, she's part of us makes it that much better.
For folks who don't know, take them through your career a little bit, because you were a rider, a jockey out in the afternoons, but then transitioned work rider Charlie Whittingham. Just to kind of take us through where you started and how you got to where you are now.
Started out on the ground grooming horses and hot walking horses, but eventually I did get to ride races, and my riding career never put me on the back of anything close to this, but as a work rider I was I was Charlie Whittingham's main work rider for a year when we had Sunday Silence as a baby and Ferdinand was in the barn and Goodbye Halo and Ruhlman and an endless number of grade one. I mean, every day I was getting on another grade one winner, whether it was turf or dirt. I got to work some great horses for Bobby Frankel, Eddie Gregson, Super Diamond, Candy's Gold, horses like that. And, you know, I did get on Midnight Bizou before the race at Monmouth, the Molly Pitcher. And, you know, people ask you, like, well, what does it feel like, or how do you know? And it's hard to, there's intangibles. It's hard to put into words the difference. When you get on the back of a horse like that, you just sense it, you feel it, the way they carry themselves, the way they move, their demeanor. And she has that. So I think the fact that I've been able to get on, I've been on a Kentucky Derby winner, I've been on a Kentucky Oaks winner, and now I've been on a personal Ensign winner in Midnight BZ, just for a quick jog around the track. But it's a special thing, and I think, you know, that helps allow me to appreciate it that much more.
And now transition, Jeff Bloom Racing. I'll tell people you have a nice website. People can kind of catch up with the team and the horses and whatnot. And I just wanted to touch on a couple of horses that are part of your team now. Beamy Awards, does that signify you are a Twitter fan?
Well, he's the star of the barn, of course. I mean, there is some others in the barn, but Beamy Award is, I'm a little bit of a fan of it. Look, I figured it was going to be the cheesiest, easiest way to take down a Beamy Award, but it hasn't worked out for me yet. It might be because we haven't been able to do much since we broke our maiden, but we think we're still going to find our way to the winner's circle with him.
And I wanted a little update on a horse that I have liked for a while now, Snapper Sinclair. So I had a workout down at Churchill just recently. What's up for Snapper Sinclair?
We love Snapper Sinclair. He will be forever one of my all-time favorites. The horse has an incredible personality. He's by City Zip, who I'm such a fan of. I've had such great success with his offspring. He's in fantastic shape. He's in Kentucky right now, gearing up for Kentucky Downs. We're pointing him to the Tourist, and so hopefully there's a lot of horses nominated to that race. So the hope is that we'll be able to draw in and take down another race. He's undefeated at Kentucky Downs, having won the juvenile there. So hopefully he gets into that spot. He's doing really well.
Yeah, a lot of people I've had in over the last few weeks. What's up next with this horse? Kentucky Downs. So much money.
It's hard to say no.
Right.
$130,000 maiden races.
Right.
And so, although, you know, as nice as that program is, it's Kentucky-centric. The Kentucky
sure.
breeding program is what makes those, you know, that
exactly.
those purse enhancements. Come back for a minute, and of course, we're partially sponsored on Loose on the Lead and on my radio show exclusively among breeders by Hill and Dale. And Midnight Loot
yeah.
continues to be just a font at bargain prices. As a stallion, and he gets all kinds. He, as Baffert has said forever, that if he had had the opportunity and if he had not had the unusual throat issue, it was never a question that Midnight Loot couldn't be a two-turn horse. But he did have a strange throat issue that kept him running short. But he gets tons of two-turn horses. This was an $80,000 April OBS purchase, two-year-old in training sale. That puts a filly like this in the range of virtually anybody that wants to be in this game from an ownership standpoint. And we bought a pair of horses in June for 30 and 20. We got 2 two-year-olds this year. I've got a couple of others that we bought last year that are 3-year-olds, including Minute Mouse, who's running on Wednesday. This is really one of the high-profile success stories for $80,000 at a 2-year-old in training sale purchase.
Yeah, it all worked out. We were talking this morning. I love this filly from the get-go, and I'm a fan of Midnight Loot, first as a racehorse, and as you said, maybe would have been one of the best two-turn handicap horses had he not had the throat issue, but still what he did is incredible, considering. And I had tried to acquire some Midnight Loot offspring and hadn't been able to. And when I went into the auction ring, I really didn't think I was going to be able to afford her. I thought she was going to be a little bit out of my price range, but I went in with the determination and focus that, you know, I'm going to take her down. And when the hammer dropped at 80, I was thrilled because I really did think it was on the light side. It wasn't like she had one of those previews at the Breeze show that sizzled or that was eye-catching. But those aren't the types that we're identifying anyways most of the time because, guess what?
Yeah.
They're going to be $750,000. And so I've got numerous mares in foal to Midnight Loot. I've got babies on the ground. And obviously we started it off the right way with this filly who, as I said, I was a fan for a long time in Midnight Loot. And the fact that we got her for the price we did just makes it that much more amazing and special.
Who developed her? Who consigned her?
So Woodford Thoroughbreds actually bred,
yep.
trained, and sold her
okay.
at the
sure.
OBS April consignment.
Well, for $80,000 after yesterday, what was yesterday? Another $400 and change. She's over $3 million.
If you take out the $80,000 that we paid for and the tax.
Pretty good return. ROI.
It's not so bad.
It's not bad. It's, yeah. It's,
where do you get most of your horses, or is it a mix? Yearling sales, two-year-old sales?
It's all of the above. I love the two-year-old sales, but we've done quite well at the yearling sales. We're going to be active again this year, acquiring yearlings and even weanlings. We had a first out winner not that long ago with a weanling we had purchased, a horse by the name of Tomatoto, who I think is looking to be a real nice horse. So it's all of the above. We also breed our own horses now as well. So it's kind of the full gamut.
Very good. All right. Ready to move on? You got anything else?
I just, congratulations.
Yeah, I mean,
just delighted.
Thank you so much.
As a horseman and a guy around great horses, obviously you were high on your race, obviously, and I think most of the fans over there thought, as I say, one of the more most exciting race of the day, really, with the Ding Dong finish. But on a day like that, your opinions on the rest of the day, certainly it lived up to the hype. I thought the entire stakes program was very exciting yesterday. What jumped out to you?
Right? I mean, like a remarkable day of racing. And look, how lucky did we get with the weather? It was a great crowd. We had some beyond fascinating matchups, including the personal Ensign. Travers was fantastic. I mean, that's what racing's all about. What a showcase event. And to be able to be part of that just made it that much more special. So what a great day of racing for the fans.
And how do you celebrate a great one? What'd you do last night?
Went out and had a real nice steak dinner, actually, with the family and our partners. And it was just a real good time. And actually, for the first time in the entire meet, went out on the town. I lasted for, I would say, 10, maybe 15 minutes, which is good for me. So that was a big time
celebration. It was crazy down there last night.
Yeah, it was crazy,
I was out for a while. There was a good post-Travers crowd downtown. Yeah. Well, congratulations, and we appreciate you taking the time to come over here. Not only congratulations yesterday, but as we kind of alluded to, good luck going forward for the remainder of the year with Midnight Beast.
Appreciate it, guys. Thank you so much.
All right. We'll take a break. When we come back, I saw him in the green room. Lenny Shulman will join us from the Blood Horse. We'll talk a little stakes action from yesterday and more. Stay tuned.
Recent study of some of the top online wagering sites, Capital OTB won big in total player rewards, far surpassing some of the best-known wagering sites in America. While other rewards programs simply offer you points redeemable for gift cards, Capital OTB's rebates are paid to you in actual cash. Plus, Capital OTB gives you full and immediate access to your money. So if all you're getting now are points and gift cards, join Capital OTB Player Rewards today and get cash back. Visit CapitalOTBBet.com and sign up today.
We're back on Loose on the Lead on this post-Travers Sunday. Always one of the fun recaps of the meet. And one more next week after we get into Labor Day and the closing. It's gone by very quickly. But we can't leave Saratoga on this show without a Lenny Shulman visit. And it's upon us.
You're right. You can't, because you've forcibly got me here today. Well, security forces.
We've been anticipating this for weeks,
yes.
Knowing that you were going to be in town. And actually, you've been in town for quite a while.
So. Yeah, it's been great. Actually, Friday I was out at the Santana and Doobie Brothers show at SPAC, which was
really?
Phenomenal.
Was it great?
Yeah, both bands are just incredible. And I know Seth was a little late today because he was at the KISS show last night. And it takes a while to get
the
paint off.
Exactly.
You know, I keep telling him with the beard, it's tricky with that paint, you know, but it took him forever to get the Fakakta paint off today.
In the day, I had the Live Kiss album. I wore it out. I was playing a little
The platforms? Did you have the platforms? Yeah.
I did not go into the fan, the cosplay, but I had the album.
I love it.
Well, no, it was great. It's been great up here. And yes, the dogs went to the dog beach at Lake George the other day.
Nice.
So, it's been wonderful.
I didn't even know there was a dog beach.
There is a dog beach at Lake George, yes. And not only that, but they were actually, you know, making friends with some very attractive young ladies. So they finally earned their keep after 10 years. It's great.
You know, it's also nice to have Lenny on. Haskin has been surgically removed from you, right? They successfully...
I haven't seen Steve since the Gumbo Fest Friday morning over at Gia's. Say, no, I didn't see him at the track all day yesterday. I don't know where he was.
Well, because I did float the idea with Seth. I said, should we get Haskin over as well and do the Haskin Shulman show?
By the time I got to Gumbo, he wasn't there anymore. You were there. He wasn't there.
Yeah, he was there, and 2 seconds later they were gone, and I don't know if Gio insulted them or something. I mean, not that would ever happen.
We haven't mentioned the Gumbo, though, but once again, very,
Gumbo
very,
was
very
TRF.
Good.
Damn
TRF
good.
TRF did a great job.
Good.
I have to laugh every year. I love it. I get 2 helpings. But it looks like they're doing it in a garbage can and they're stirring it with a canoe paddle. It has a look, but it is very good.
It's like a witch's cauldron.
Exactly. I'm sure it is all sanitary because, like I say, 2 helpings for me, and it's always good. And it benefited the TRF this year.
Yes, at 10 in the morning, no less. But now Chip is a chef.
Oh, yeah,
He's fantastic. I think it was better than ever.
Oh, it was very good.
Yeah.
And Eric was like, not live tweeting it, but he was sending out pictures. There was when they were making the roux, and then they kept building it up, and then I lost track at a certain point on Friday. But thanks to everybody who went and helped raise money. Let's turn our attention, Lenny, to the action.
Yes.
And I talked to Jeff Bloom before we came on the air, and I made the point that after a first half of the year for the sport in general that could only be described as tumultuous,
shaky,
and tempestuous and miserable, we really turned the corner nicely. And the second half of the year, there's some real momentum. A lot of the most frustrating and unnerving headlines have kind of disappeared. And it's days like yesterday that just bring people back to the game, no matter how many negative distractions there are. And I made that point on Twitter that the quality of the racing, the excitement, the gambling aspects all kind of gelled yesterday magically. And the storylines that come out of it, exceptional, led by, and let's turn right to it, Claude Ray McGahee III, who is as good as ever walked a shed row. I cannot gush enough about what he did here with this horse and the ridiculous notion that, he's not going to be as good at a mile and a quarter. Let's go through the Travers.
And again, Code of Honor is the number 2 horse. 6 is Tacitus. Number 7, Mucho Gusto. Number 11, Endorse. Number 1, Owendale, who I liked. Owendale made a little move.
Talk about the winner. Owendale, 5th. Good job. I mean, stop with that.
That's the wise guy horse.
What was shocking here, the change of tactics, the adding of the blinkers, and they were not full cup. They were just cheaters. But this is the story out of the gate.
With Tacitus you're talking about.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't think anybody expected him to be up
that
where
close.
He was. No, not at all. Of course, the pace setter, Chess, whoever, stumbled out of the gate and wasn't a factor. But, I'm not talking about the winner yet, but I thought Mucho Gusto ran a very gutsy race for a horse that I didn't know if he would enjoy the 10 furlongs or not. He stayed on pretty damn well.
watching here, you can see, and the chicklets are very helpful. Look at John Velasquez, who wisely, you know, the inside was bad again yesterday. He gets off the two path. He moves onto the 4-5 path. In the clear the entire way. He's got his choice of where to go. He begins to move here. And by the way, yeah. I did a loose split evaluation. 24, 24, 24, 24, and 25.
Yeah, he didn't panic. I mean, the fractions weren't very fast. I mean, he certainly didn't panic. He waited to make his move right at the 5/16ths, and boom.
Meanwhile, you mentioned Chess Chief not getting out of the gate. Part of the story and the way the pace unfolded is the nine horse in the back of the pack looking at Bikinis with a terrible stumble.
Yes.
And
yes.
That changed
yes.
the complexion as well.
Yeah.
And here's John Velasquez is going to get his second Travers. Flower Alley, people may forget, was his first and previous. This is the fourth Travers for Shug. And he now moves within one of...
Woody Stevens.
Burt Mulholland. Nice try.
You could have given me 10 shots at that.
You wouldn't have come up with Burt Mulholland?
I would have had Gene Simmons before Burt Mulholland.
George Widener, of course, including Jiper and 830 and several. Shug is not retiring, by the way, after this.
Let's point out that this horse that was magnificent yesterday and also, you know, took a while. But look at the foaling date, right? May 23rd.
He's the youngest horse in the field.
He's 3 months younger than many of these horses who are usually February foals. And, look, he might be just coming into himself. But, you know, I think also I want to be from Missouri here a little and say show me. I mean, he's been one-on, one-off, one-on, one-off. You know, if he stays as good, can he win the Gold Cup and go right on? Absolutely, without a doubt. But, you know, with this crop of three-year-olds, you got to kind of not fall victim to recency and take a step back and see what's going to be, because there's a lot of question marks still out there.
I said earlier on the handicapping show, he steps into the Eclipse picture, right? Because
of course.
I think Maximum Security is up there, but with him not making this race,
yeah.
I think if they do choose to go Gold Cup and he beats Older, puts a grade one against Older on the resume, I think he's firmly in the picture for the Eclipse.
No, he's absolutely in the picture. I think Maximum Security, you know, needs to come back and show that he's 100% and do it, because let's face it, are we going to see War of Will again? Are we going to see Country House again? No. We're going to see Sir Winston
no.
again? No. We're going to see Omaha Beach? Not enough to be a serious contender for the picture. And I'll tell you who the sleeper is. I've just thrown it out there. It's dependent on a lot of other results. Mind Control, who was magnificent yesterday.
Yes, he was.
Just a fantastic effort to get by Chancelot and win the Jerkins. You know, that's his third stakes win, second graded win, and you'd think that, you know, Dirt Mile, I would say, I don't think he's fast enough to run in the sprint, but certainly the Dirt Mile, you'd think he's eligible for. That's him in the red and white in the middle of the track there.
This is a tremendous win for the Brunetti family,
yes.
For Greg Sacco and his brother. And look at Mind Control's finish here. There is a storyline to talk about. And by the way, how about Vicky Foley?
How about Hog Creek Hustle?
Hog Creek Hustle.
I thought Hog Creek Hustle won.
Yeah.
And then on the replay.
Well, then you need to have
you need
surgery. Retina
surgery.
Because it wasn't even close. Oh!
I'll show that again.
Oh, well, there it is. There it is. There it is right there.
There's a whole muzzle on there. No, a tremendous performance.
Well, let's not forget. I mean, Chancelot was thought to be invincible coming into this race.
There's a couple of things about what went on here with Chancelot. And, you know, for those that listen to Rich Migliori talk after the Amsterdam and going into this race, Rich was concerned. And I could show you, actually, it's funny, texting with Rich after the race, the Amsterdam.
Yeah.
I texted Rich and said, what was Jaramillo doing whipping that horse when he's got a 5-6-10 length lead? And Rich has maintained ever since the Amsterdam that punishing a horse like that for winning big and hitting him down the stretch leaves a kind of a negative imprint. Now, it may be a contributing factor, and you can talk about the regression portion, you know, of you know, horse runs a 121 buyer, runs a negative six on Thoroughgraph. There's going to be regression. We know that. However, the rail was not the place to be, and Jaramillo did. He only drifted off of it off the turn a little bit. I would have gotten out into the a little bit more into the middle of the track. You know, the race was what? That was the seventh, the eighth. There was enough evidence to know that you didn't want to be on the rail. And then the other thing I don't get, here's a horse that absolutely throttled these horses for the most part.
Yeah.
What are you doing trying to get away and back it up? And you've got the fastest horse. You've got a horse that can run 43 and change and basically gut everybody. Go ahead and gut everybody. Win or try to win the way your horse has already shown he can win. And I don't think he did any favors trying to, you know, hold something in reserve. That never works. Go ahead and build that lead, make everybody else pump and chase. And you know, if you build up that lead like you did in the Amsterdam, they're not going to catch you.
Well, the time to hold the reserve was instead of whipping the horse in the last race. That's the time to reserve, not during the next race. So, yeah, that didn't make a lot of sense. But, you know, if you look at Mind Control, got stopped dead.
He's had trouble the last couple of races.
Yeah, and so he made a lot of sense. He's obviously a Grade One winner here too, and he's a really nice horse. If he can go on and handle the two turns of the Dirt Mile, I assume that's where they would point with him. You know, he's in the conversation. I mean, obviously, with Tech Maximum Security not doing much and Code of Honor not doing much at the end of it, but he's a really overlooked three-year-old, and like you said, it's a great story. Greg Sacco in the Winter Circuit, as it was just beside himself. It means so much, you know, son of a trainer in Jersey, and it's just so much to win a Grade One here. And he also trained that horse to his, what, third in the Belmont out of nowhere, second or third in the Belmont? He's had a hell of a nice couple of months, Greg Sacco. So.
And the Brunettis, I mean, you know, here with the passing of John Brunetti, and, you know, this is a horse that is a homebred of theirs, by Stay Thirsty. There was a lot of neat things about, you know, as we said, with Jeff Bloom, and you fold in, how about, you know, Will Farish getting himself a win in a Travers. You think back to Grasshopper.
Yeah.
Grasshopper and Street Sense. You want to see one of the all-time great Travers? How about those two? You know, all the whole day. I mean, you had nothing but great stories.
Yeah, going back to what you said at the top of the segment, you know, I think this all kicked off with, you know, the Belmont day. I mean, you talk about a Breeders' Cup quality day of racing that kind of took us out of the Santa Anita segment of the year and into the second half. You know, Martin Pans and what his team does at Belmont, I mean, that was a Breeders' Cup day. And yesterday, I think you could argue, was at least somewhere in between a Breeders' Cup Friday and Saturday, I think, would fit in. So, you know, besides the Breeders' Cup, which is coming up too, you know, all of a sudden you've got two other days put on by New York that are Breeders' Cup quality days. It's phenomenal. Like you said, a handle record on track and all sources, and it's working.
Safe day, too. Had a safe day. And it, that's been a, throughout the summer, we've had, knock on wood, a very good series of particularly on the high profile afternoons. A couple of things before we look at some other stakes action, because there's plenty other things to discuss, but we should note, considering you talked about the Jerkins, Suge earlier in the card, the win by performer in the fourth race, 96 buyer in his third career start at 6.5 furlongs, and that's a horse that basically performed on a par with the Jerkins, 97 buyer for Mind Control in the Jerkins. And so Suge has got himself a serious horse emerging. Performer had been cross-entered in today's state, but they opted to, and I think he made the right decision. I thought he was going to maybe try him on the grass today, but he's not. So make a note of that. Also, Mark Cassie and Mrs. Weber, always nice to see Charlotte Weber with a promising horse. How about the second-time starter, Tap It to Win, the homebred?
Who looked great, was kind of going backwards on the turn and then came up the rail and ran away.
86 buyer in his maiden breaker. His brother, by the way, Super Stonehenge. If we go back to the Saratoga sale, where Charlotte spent $1.3 million, 1.3 carats is the dam, and she was a modest stake winner, but she is so far 2 for 2. Super Stonehenge, very quietly up at Woodbine, is putting together some wins, and he's worth watching. So she's going to be a productive broodmare, and this is a serious two-year-old for Charlotte. So that's the rest of the action away from the stakes. Let's dive into some of the results. How do you want to take them, Seth?
Well, we can go...
Chronologic?
Yeah.
Mottoli?
Yeah, sure. We'll start with the fifth and move forward from there, because that was a nice performance from Mottoli in the four-go. Mottoli's going to be the number three horse in here. Clearly, the disappointment was Promises Fulfilled. They ding-donged it early in the race, and Promises Fulfilled winds up fading to sixth in the field of six, but Mottoli rebounds nicely off of the disappointment in the Vanderbilt, obviously, but got it done yesterday.
Yeah, you wondered if he may have been over the top and whether we'd seen his best earlier in the year, but it turns out that the Vanderbilt was the outlier, and he certainly looked good coming back to form yesterday. I must admit, I had some questions, off of that Vanderbilt, whether we'd seen his best.
I kind of jumped on board with the two races down at Oaklawn and had been a fan, so I stuck on the bandwagon yesterday, but there were those question marks, obviously, that he'd run so well early in the year. The string of triple-digit buyers was broken in the Vanderbilt, so there was the question mark about has the horse turned the corner a little bit, but question and answer.
Yeah, absolutely, and Friends Fire, that poor guy, he always seems to kick in and run his race, but he's just doesn't have the brilliance of some of the ones that he faces.
And we'll watch for him, I suppose, in the Vosburgh. And he's better at Belmont. There's no question that he's best at Belmont. But I thought he ran very well. The horse, frankly, that I've been kind of following and hoping for a spot, Killy Beg's Captain. And what a nice weekend for John Terranova and his operation. This was a terrific effort, and of course on Friday, minor upset for the Terranova barn in the Albany with Funny Guy. So nice performance by Killy Beg's Captain, gets grade one placed in this spot, but the son of Escondorea, Mottoli, a 105 buyer, so he gets back on the triple digit front, and they'll march forward.
And a savvy purchase by B-Wayne Hughes and a Spendthrift organization, which will stand Mottoli.
And speaking of the purchases, who bought into I saw it, and I didn't ingrain it in my head. Who bought into Promises Fulfilled on Friday, on Thursday or Friday?
Windstar.
Windstar did?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Yes. There you go. Turn our attention to the Ballerina, and what a wonderful story this is.
Wow.
Come Dancing and Carlos Martin. Carlos's first grade one since, I believe, 1991.
Oh, that's it. And it was a fabulous performance, too. We didn't see the start, but she gets off to a very bad start, sits in the back of the pack, then comes into the stretch and just kind of runs away from this field. And the word was she'd been working lights out.
We talked about it last week with Mike Welch.
Yeah, she kind of lived up to it clearly in here. Really, really nice mayor for Carlos Martin getting it done yesterday in the Grade 1 Ballerina in fine fashion.
I mean, that's just a wow performance. I must admit, I hadn't followed this horse all that much. I know Mia Mischief. I saw that race, Churchill Derby Day, and was very impressed. And the Claravich horse certainly, but wow, did she run away from him?
And kind of a modest, by her standard, even a 96 buyer out of this for Come Dancing, and she will head toward the Filly and Mare Sprint. I'm going to imagine the likely favorite, right?
There's something in California. I don't know.
There's nothing hiding exactly.
Who are these owners, Steve? Do you know them? Blue Devil?
Blue Devil is a guy by the name of Mark Holliday, and a guy that's been active. This is a big a big win and a big situation for them. You could see Mark yesterday post-race just beaming and completely thrilled. It's a homebred, which is also kind of a neat story out of the Tisnow mare. Yeah. And you know, that's a high-level mating, a Malibu Moon with a Tisnow mare. And you know, this is one of those stories that you look at the beginning of the career. You go back to when she was a 2-year-old and debuted as a winner at Aqueduct in the beginning of the winter, and then was sidelined for over a year. And so patience, and you know, then you know, kind of going up the ladder, a couple of setbacks here and there, but they never got deterred. They were willing to try her at longer distances. They were rewarded with grade one placements going around a ground, but she is obviously best doing this. And of course, her distaff earlier this spring at Aqueduct on the Wood Memorial Day, that's one of the best performances of the year by any sex. Come Dancing, really, really, really nice storyline, and she seems set to filly and mare sprinter champion. You would think she's the leader in the clubhouse.
Oh, absolutely.
But, you know, you do have to keep tabs of the horse of Hugh Robertson's that won the prep for the Masters, for the Presque Isle Masters the other day.
Oh,
it's very nice. I'm drawing a blank on her name. Oh, for goodness sakes.
We'll look it up.
It's a good name. Oh, for goodness sakes.
Moving on to the Boston Spa on the grass. Boston Spa yesterday won by Annals of Time. Chad Brown, Javier Castellano.
Boston Spa is the girls' race. Significant. Boston Spa, significant form.
Yeah. I pulled up the wrong chart. Significant form gets it done in the Boston Spa. And that one, Javier Castellano.
Johnny V.
I have all my charts mixed up.
Johnny V.
Johnny V and a big day for Johnny V.
Not just a big day. Johnny's been hot for about 10 days after a terrible first half of the season. He absolutely sleptwalked through the first 4 weeks. And then all of a sudden you could see a couple of wins. He went out of town, of course. And then last week in California, 3 wins at Del Mar. And it just seems like Johnny just came to life. Yeah. It's one of those strange things that happens with jocks. And I thought it was amazing, and there was very little discussion about it the first half of the summer, that Johnny, there was a point where Johnny had like 4 wins 3 weeks into the meet, and it wasn't like he wasn't on, you know, his usual collection of nice horses, but all of a sudden, just the timing and bunch of things came together.
His timing has moved beautifully. I mean, you just saw it there. I mean,
and on Code of Honor?
So this is Stephanie Brandt, the winning owner of this.
Stephanie Seymour Brandt.
The entire Brandt family getting in on the action here.
Well, in 55, you know, part of the thing that was made this kind of fun, Peter Brandt and Chad could have run 55 on Friday in the State Bred card, and they decided to go head-to-head. I tell you, the interesting runner in here was that Indian Blessing, who came back to the United States again and continues to run well when she comes to the States, but just can't seem to get over. But Indian Blessing ran very well at 10-1, and he ended up, it's funny, 7-1 was a nice price on Significant Form, and I kind of understand that the money all flowed to Masha, the Buzz Schwartz filly.
Just never got involved.
No, and neither did Secret Message. I did not understand what Jose Ortiz's plan was at the back of the pack, and at no point did he ever seem to really ask the Grand Motion trainee for any run. I don't know what happened there, and I haven't seen a comment from Graham, but
they were very high on
her.
As recently as yesterday morning,
exactly.
At Saul Kuhlman's brunch, but nothing happened there. And also, the Marty Schwartz horse just didn't run at all.
No. That gets us to the
Sword Dancer. Now we were at the Sword
Dancer.
Now
swing it to action.
Sword Dancer, Annals of Time, number 7 horse. Saddler's Joy, number 9. Number 4, Channel Cat. Number 8, Channel Maker. Your 1, 2, 3, 4 finishers. Annals of Time went off as the 5-2 favorite in here. I was a little surprised. I mean, I just because I didn't use it that high, but everybody's talking about it. Maybe one I swung and missed on, but it's Chad and Klarovich coming off a win earlier in the meet. Yeah, national claimer and follows up in the Sword Dancer.
The betting was very tight throughout leading up to this race. They were all 3-1, 7-2, 4-1, 9, and they were switching around, so the public certainly didn't land on anybody. I unfortunately landed on Ya Primo, and I don't know what happened there, because second time in the States, you know, the Bowling Green, it was a great first out, and you figure second time, boom, and set pretty reasonable fractions. I just don't know how why he disappeared the way he did there in the last quarter mile.
Well, if you run that again, if you don't mind, Brian, run that stretch again of the Sword Dancer, because Ya Primo, watch carefully on the hedge in those Don Alberto colors.
Six horse, Ya Primo.
You mentioned the 114 three-quarter time and 140 for the mile, and he's not being ridden by Jose Ortiz in the stretch at all. He's not asking him at all. Are we running this again? You're not the first person to wonder what was going on there, what happened.
Yeah, right here after very
now
soft
watch.
Fractions.
He's not asking him at all. He's just sort of just going through the motions.
I wonder if something happened.
Yeah, maybe if he felt something that didn't want to pursue with him. Meanwhile, you know, Sadler's Joy got a much better trip in here under Jose Lascano than Castellano had given him. Not that Castellano gave him, but he certainly in the Bowling Green had traffic issues down inside. And so I thought being in the nine hole might help Sadler's Joy to have a cleaner outside voyage. Lascano gave him every chance to win, but Annals of Time, who was always expected. You know, this is one of those horses like Bricks and Mortar that Chad Brown has just been so good with. And of course, having Seth Klarman as an owner who is quite willing to just put things on hold, let a horse recoup, give it time, and when the horse is right, you know, this also fits the same, we mentioned Bricks and Mortar, obviously, but also the storyline as we've had this summer with Preservationist, who's coming back in the Woodward next week for Jimmy Jerkins and Centennial. They were patient. Horse wasn't right.
Yes.
And even at 6 years old, this is a six-year-old. You get rewarded. You don't have to be paid. I understand there's pressures and there's owners, and if you're in partnerships and you know there's people that say, we should run, we need to run, and I'm paying bills. If you can't sit quietly and let your horse get the time it needs when the horse needs time, you shouldn't be involved in the game.
You're absolutely right. I write stake stories every week for the Blood Horse, and I can't tell you the amount of time somebody will say, patience was the key,
Always.
Was the key. We gave the horse the time he needed. It just pops up too many times to not be true.
This horse is the model of that, too, for folks who aren't familiar with the record. Won the Hollywood Derby in 2016, one start in 2017, September, and then came back in June of this year.
Almost 2 years there.
Before yesterday, seven starts as a six-year-old. So this is a perfect example of patience paying off.
Yeah.
And they obviously, they didn't geld him. He's still a horse. And, you know, here's a grade one win for a son of Temple City. He's got kind of an unusual breeding. And, talk about your breeding stories.
Yeah.
Montecule is one of the odder, and of course the people that bred Big Brown. One of the more unusual, I remember from the Big Brown story with Boundary and their approach, they had an unusual philosophy.
It's very analytic driven, very numbers driven. Yes. So,
and here's,
what was it, Meow? Is that the dam? Big Brown's dam? MEOW or something like that?
I can't remember.
Yeah. But no, you're right. And I mean, that's not a pedigree that screams major Kentucky farm, but. Hey, keep winning grade ones, we'll find a spot.
Well, and also, you know, with Temple City, it obviously speaks to Dynaformer. And, you know, Lenny, we had a very successful Saratoga sale and a successful New York sale, where maybe we can transition a little bit toward the fall, and we'll ask you a few questions for some of your areas of expertise. What I was leaning toward was the commercial market versus you know, like a Dinoformer, and we talk about Mrs. Weber. She was a big Dinoformer and King Mambo fan. The breeding and the sale side of things really tends to the
commercial,
the commercial attractiveness.
Yes.
But it isn't necessarily great. In some cases, stamina and some of the things that are good for sustaining the breed. What's your thought about where we are? I mean, where the Into Mischief, Tappet, Bedaglia, yeah. Adoro. I mean, we've got Curlin. You know, we've got a very concentrated core.
We've gotten deeper. I think we've gotten deeper here in the last couple of years. I think we had lost a lot of bloodlines overseas, and frankly, it was thinning out a little bit. You know, our own bloodlines, and I think we have got, you know, John Sikora and the job he did bringing Curlin back. Kitten's Joy's obviously always been there for him, but
well, the recent his remarketing of his reintroduction of Kitten's Joy really to a wider audience and better mares.
Yes, and another reintroduction that Lane's End did, bringing the Factor back from Japan, who is a top 10 sire now, or a top 12 sire, a fantastic sire of turf horses. I think we're getting deeper. I've asked around about the freshman, the first year yearling sires this year, and what people are looking at. Of course, Run Happy has sucked a lot of air out of the room just with the ad campaign. Thank God they took down those signs when they did before the Travers yesterday. But Nyquist and Frosted apparently are causing a lot of commotion.
Sure.
And are really well thought of, and yeah, to your point, there's definitely a discrepancy between a Dinoformer who didn't get attractive looking yearlings and the performance out there. And I keep going back to Trevor Dunman, who had this great line that he always said, "It's not a beauty contest out there." However, in the commercial market, it is a beauty contest to an extent, but the commercial market's crazy. You know, they forgive first-year sires, they'll buy them like crazy. And then when they're second-year sires, everybody's off them. And that's when it doesn't make any sense at all, but that's when savvy agents can come in and find value in the same horses that, were going for twice the money that before. There's a lot of irrationality to the commercial market, let's face it.
We also, with this, continuing, I won't say preference for turf racing, but there's a lot of positives to the proliferation of grass in North America. The dialogue that is going to continue, and it's probably going to raise its head again September, October, as we lead toward the Breeders' Cup. It has died down after all of the difficulties at Santa Anita through the winter. We were getting a reintroduction of the discussion of the synthetic question.
Yeah.
And frankly, with what's going to be whatever plans are going to happen downstate at Belmont, there is going to be the discussion of making the inner turf course, perhaps a synthetic oval. I brought this up with Michael Dubb last week, as Naira has to make plans downstate. There's going to be, I think, a dialogue, right, Lenny? I mean, what is it back in Kentucky?
Well,
what were you hearing out of the winter?
Well, I'll just go back to 10 years ago and the previous one. If you have just spent $80 million to buy Justify, you do not want a game that has just changed under your feet and you've got a horse that's not going to sire runners that like the synthetic sire. So, yeah, breeders are not going to go quietly into that good night and let this thing go back to synthetic. It's just not going to happen. There's too much of an investment in a horse that's proven on dirt to change the game under your feet. So at the Jockey Club Roundtable here last week, there was I don't know that it's a movement. I don't know that there's serious research, but people are now talking about creating some sort of hybrid synthetic surface that behaves like a dirt surface. So you have the safety of synthetic and the performance of dirt horses over it. It's being talked about. I don't know if there's money going to research yet, but that's something that's definitely being talked about. But I don't think, and going back to the New York model that you mentioned, I think the big question is Aqueduct around going forward? Because if not, then it makes sense to have an all-weather surface at Belmont if you're going to have winter racing at Belmont. I don't know that portends a move back to synthetic, but certainly it would make sense if that's going to be your winter track to have a track like that.
What do you expect, and to fill out the discussion about the fall, you know, Del Mar has had a solid meet, business off a little bit, but that's a lot of that has to do with just the sheer number of horse population and the number of races that, you know, they've had 7-8 race cards, so that they can run 5 days a week. And David Jerkins has done a terrific job making that meet go.
Yeah.
However, the horsemen in California are dreading next week. They're dreading having to go back to Los Angeles and back to Santa Anita. That's just, and people can scoff at that, but that's a fact. And there's a real uncertainty as to what is going to go on when things return to Arcadia. What is your expectation for September, October, and into Breeders' Cup?
Well, the first part of your question, the horse population thing, a lot of those California trainers moved strings to other parts of the country when things were really, when the crap was hitting the fan. So that was an aggravating factor in the horse population out there. I think Santa Anita has had time to do whatever they need to do to that racing surface. I think that racing surface was a factor in their difficulties. I think the human decisions to run on days when they probably shouldn't have been running over the turf. And let's remember, the turf course was as guilty as the dirt course was of a high number of fatalities
during that thing.
So I think they have had the time to go over it and get it pristine. I would be very surprised if the track was a problem. I think, quite frankly, the philosophy of management there at the time that meet started last year was more of a problem than the courses and some of the people they let go and some of the decisions they made and some of the philosophies they pursued. I think they've had a deathbed conversion. I would be very surprised if that track wasn't shipshape.
Understood. And Dennis Moore, I won't argue for a minute that we don't have the confidence in Dennis Moore to have that track as safe as possible. The management situation has not improved, and in fact, there's been zero contact from Santa Anita with any of the horsemen that are currently down at Del Mar. There's been no preparation. There's been no communication. And from my personal standpoint, I have zero confidence that the Stronach Group has anything in place that improves the scenario when they get back to Santa Anita. And that the word from every corner at Del Mar is nobody is looking forward to going back.
Well, you've talked to more people there than I have. I know they've shifted some personnel around, which was probably necessary and a good idea. Certainly the philosophy of getting in people's faces and forcing them to run at the cost of losing their stalls, I believe that's a thing of the past. So, you know, to that extent, I think there are new philosophies in place that hopefully will mitigate some of the damage going forward. I certainly would hope so. I'm not saying it's a company that you would necessarily model yours after, but they have tried bringing new people in there, I think, right? I don't know if it's window dressing or whether it's of substance, but you've obviously talked to horsemen who aren't happy about it, but I don't think anybody's happy leaving Del Mar either, so that's... But I, for one, am a big backer of the Breeders' Cup decision to stay there. I thought it was the right move. I thought it was the only move to make. And I really hope they're repaid for that. And I think they will be. I have confidence in Santa. I mean, you don't lose a Dennis Moore. You don't lose a Hammer. You don't lose keep people like that without a comeback to bite you in the ass. And hopefully somebody learned the lesson.
We'll keep our fingers crossed as we get closer and closer to Breeders' Cup time out there. Got to wrap things up. But Lenny, before we go, talk a little bit about your book. I know you had a signing over at the museum last week.
You wrote a book?
Yeah.
Said there was a good turnout.
I'm so enthralled with this show. I forgot all about it, but thank you. Yeah, we have one more signing. That's tomorrow afternoon. I'll be at Northshire Books, 424
right
North Broadway in beautiful Saratoga Springs downtown. 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock, drop by, and we'll talk Justified tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
Tomorrow afternoon, Monday, yes.
5 to 6, Northshire Books on Broadway.
Yes.
Very good.
Thank you.
And you said you had a good turnout at the museum.
Yeah, I had a great turnout at the museum. Sold some books there. Of course, Durkin was doing his tour with the group. I said, Tom, bring him over here. And he looks at me, he goes, oh, yeah, there's Lenny Shulman. He's been at the Blood Horse for 400 years. Come on, let's go upstairs. Yeah, thanks a lot, Tom. I appreciate it. but it was. It was a great event. And Brian over at the Hall of Fame was great. And by Brian and Mike Veach have written the great Travers
books. We had them
on.
We started the whole season with them. Yeah, with their book, You Need a Crane to Lift.
No, yeah.
150 years they got to cover.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm waiting for the Kindle. The Kindle's like this on it. It's 100
Kindle,
pounds.
You get a mainframe when you buy the Kindle. You Sperry Univac.
Hell.
What page would you like, Dave?
Siri, lift my book for me.
All right. As always with the Lenny Shulman visit,
you get some yucks.
Lots of laughs. Got to wrap things up, though. We're late again.
No.
When I came in this morning,
that's impossible.
They said, you know, we have to change the starting time because I was a little late waiting for the Bond horses.
It was the Kiss makeup. He's making an excuse.
They said, we're going to have to change the time. 9 to 11. We're going to go 9:10 to 11:20 from now on.
Mr. Love Gun, everybody.
Well, like I said, I did have the live album, but I stopped there. I did not have a whole library of the Kiss, but everybody in my class did it in the day. All right, we got to wrap things up. It's been a lot of fun, Lenny. Appreciate the visit.
Thanks you. Thanks
always
for having me, guys. Appreciate
good.
It.
Always great. Appreciate
thank
it.
You.
Lenny Shulman from the Blood Horse. A little bit earlier, Jeff Bloom, Bloom Racing. Nice win for them yesterday with Midnight Bijou. Steve Bick, Seth Merrill. Every Sunday morning, that means one more.
That's right.
Wow.
Roll.
Yeah.
One more week here on Loose on the Lead. That's next Sunday morning at 10 o'clock. We'll see you then.
From the backstretch at Saratoga, this is Loose on the Lead with Steve Bick and Seth Merrill. Loose on the Lead is sponsored by Thoroughgraph. Everything you need to win. Visit thoroughgraph.com. The new Colonial Downs and the Virginia Equine Alliance. Hill and Dale, home of perennial standouts. Curlin, Kitten's Joy, Midnight Luke, and emerging stallions, Violence, Byron, and Army Mule. Visit hillanddalefarms.com for consignments at the 2019 yearling sales. Case Supply, the kitchen and bath professionals across upstate New York. Showrooms in Syracuse, Auburn, and Amsterdam. Make your dream kitchen and bath a reality. Visit casesupplyinc.com. And McMahon of Saratoga, standing breakout stallion central banker. Number one in New York and among the nation's leading young sires. Visit McMahonThoroughbred.com.